Hi, welcome to the Warm Up Podcast with me, Bob Mills.
And him, Perry Grimes.
lots of good stuff. I think it was all right anyway, I don't know. Tom Watt, definitely.
Steve Perriman.
Yeah.
See, for balance, we have to do the balance, don't we? Both sides of North London. Obviously, Steve Perriman being the director of football at Exeter.
DOF. We known was director of rugby.
Yes, that was it. Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be on, the lad who talks about rugby.
What about taking a breath?
Never took a breath, not once.
Good broadcasting.
Fantastic broadcaster. So here you go. Here's the podcast. Hope you enjoy it. I don't know if you do, you do. If you don't, you don't. Something I can do about now. Too late.
It's your fault if they don't. Yeah.
And a very good morning to you. I didn't know where we were then. Morning, afternoon, evening.
Long weekend.
It's a long weekend. Very good morning to you. This is the Sunday morning warm-up, I suppose they call it, with me, Bob Mills.
And me, Perry Groves.
And on the day that Chelsea licked their wounds and Arsene Wenger is the don of North London after Arsenal triumphed in yesterday's FA Cup final.
On DAB Digital Radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, The Warm-Up with Bob Mills and Perry Groves on Talk Sport.
It's there.
The ball goes in towards the centre by Giroud, and he sends it into Ramsey, and Ramsey scores for Arsenal with a prodded header pass. Thibaut Courtois to give Arsenal the lead just seconds after conceding. Giroud went straight down the left-hand side, got beyond the defender, sent it in towards the edge of the six-yard box, and Ramsey was there to prod it home, and Thibaut Courtois was nowhere near it. It's Arsenal 2, Chelsea 1.
And that overexcited child screaming in the background behind Sam Matthews, what of course, Perry Groves, and it's Bob Mills and Perry Groves. This is the warm-up. By the way, Muzzy the Gunner did tweet in and reminded me. It's a fantastic game, everything brilliant. That minute silence was exquisite.
It was impeccable.
Absolutely. Really, really was.
You could hear if a feather drops on the floor. And normally you get one idiot at the beginning of it, shouts out something.
Or sometimes you just get someone who doesn't understand what it is.
No, it was impeccable, honestly.
It really was. Great credit to both clubs. Now then, we're going to talk to Clive Walker, the ex-Chelsea player, but I don't know what we're going to talk to him about, because I have said quite definitively, I think, that we've had enough of the FA Cup final.
No, we've got to have balance.
We have to have balance. Oh, you're using electoral college rules,
are you? Have balance. Got to tick both boxes.
We'll see. Clive Walker.
Good morning.
Hello, Clive.
And a very good morning to you, sir. Do you want to rope straight in with Grovesy about yesterday's game?
Clive, what I was surprised with Chelsea, as I said earlier, if you'd have said it like in the 70s and 80s, you'd have thought they'd been on the lash for about a week, celebrating, because they just looked a little bit leggy. They looked like a yard off it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right, Perry, to be honest. I think it was very hard for them to have the celebrations of last weekend and then maybe switch back on again. And I think that's where they found it difficult. And to be fair to Arsenal, came out the blocks, got in their faces, rattled them quite a lot, I think, in the early stages. And there were certain players who started very slowly and never even got going. And I think that's, from Chelsea's perspective, a little bit disappointing.
You know what I was surprised? People criticise Arsene Wenger about he's not tactically astute, and Tony Adams ridiculously said, he couldn't coach his way out of a paper bag. When Arsenal pressed up front, didn't they? They pressed the three with Sanchez, with Ozil and Daniel Welbeck. And then Conte didn't do anything about it because you needed someone brave enough to get on the ball. And I thought Fabregas was warming up for about 15, 20 minutes. And I thought, he's going to bring him on because Chelsea can't get hold of the ball.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was screaming out to everybody watching. I thought perhaps, I think you're talking second half, though, at that stage, Perry. I thought first half, Arsenal were by far the better side. I think they had a game plan. I think Arsene Wenger's tactics, no matter what Tony Adams said, was spot on.
Yep.
And I think from his perspective, and many people have looked at Arsene Wenger over recent years and maybe said he's got a bit staid and got stuck in his ways a little bit. But I think tactically, he sat down, worked it out with his coaching staff, and they've got it absolutely right. And Chelsea couldn't seem to recover. They were there in bits and pieces, but I think they were expecting the big stars, the Costas, the Hazards, the Pedros, to pull something out of the bag to get them going. But I thought defensively, David Luiz was poor, and I think because of that, they were beginning to struggle.
From a layman's point of view, I don't, of course, subscribe to the thing that they've been on the lash. Of course they haven't.
No, I said it looked like they
looked had. Like they're professional sportsmen. But you did get the impression that after about four or five minutes, even before the goal, but certainly after the goal, that the Chelsea players were sort of thinking, oh, hang on, they're taking out this seriously, are they?
They thought what they thought was the Community Shield.
Oh, wait a minute. If you're going to get excited about it...
No, I think as well, it's as we said before, it's difficult to switch back on again when you switched off, and I think maybe that's what they're looking at the moment. I think as well, we can go back, you know, to mine and Perry's time, you know, when the FA Cup final was massive, absolutely massive, and it made me feel a little bit like, well, it doesn't really matter because we've already won the league, and I felt a bit sickened by that in a way. But that's the nature of reality these days, and we have to accept it. But I think from a fan's, or should we say an older fan's view, it doesn't sort of sit quite nicely with us. And it's so disappointing.
Do you know what, actually, Clive? That's not a bad, because it was massive for the Arsenal fans. It was massive for the and that, the first 15, oh, sorry, first 5 minutes, it looked like there was more of a hunger. Do you know what I mean? There was more of an intensity. It's unusual for Arsenal, to be fair. They normally start slowing, it's the other way around.
Yeah, and it does. And I think as well, from the Chelsea fans' point of view, I think it was massive for them too.
Yeah.
I think I'm talking about the players more like modern-day player. I think the man who kick-started it for me, massively surprised by, was Ozil.
Yep.
I couldn't believe his attitude in the opening, shall we say, half an hour. That is the best I've seen him play all season. And many Arsenal fans will look at that and say, well, where have you been early part of the season? Had some good games, but had some awful ones as well. And I think that kick-started Arsenal into the right gear. I thought Danny Welbeck was excellent up front. And then I thought second half, Ozil went completely out of the game.
A couple of little things, Clive. Firstly, you talk about the devaluation of the FA Cup, which I think we've all seen in recent years. But, I mean, this was the double. I mean, I remember Spurs in the early 60s and then Arsenal.
71, yeah.
That was two teams in a century that had won the double. Now, since the Premier League's come in, I think there's been six.
No, there's been 11 doubles won in history.
Yeah.
Honestly, 11 doubles in history.
And
yeah.
Four of those, two of them were in the last 19th century, and two of them were Arsenal. But since then, so the other seven have been done since the Premier League. Yeah, but it's still, and Liverpool 86, but it's still the double. You'd think, surely, come on, don't you want to be a player, the Chelsea players that think, it's not just the FA Cup, it's the double.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Even that didn't seem to lift them.
Yeah, you're absolutely spot on. We've got to go back a week to players having had a tough season and switching off, and going back to the scenario of switching back on again, it is so tough. And against, you know, on their day, Arsenal as good as anybody in the Premier League. And I think if you give them a chance to play, which Chelsea did in the early stages, played much too deep for me, allow players like Ozil to get on the ball. And you can imagine Perry, can't you, Ozil getting on the ball thinking, oh, I'll have some of this. And he did, you know. And I think that fired Arsenal to thinking, well, we can win this, you know. Whereas maybe at kick-off, they probably were a bit... bit in awe in many ways, but they just proved a point as well.
Clive, listen, thank you so much for joining us. Pleasure to talk to you. Hope you're well, mate. Speak to you soon. Thank you very
Cheers,
much.
Cheers, Clive.
Clive Man. Walker.
On DAB Digital Radio and 1089 and 1053 AM, The Warm-Up with Bob Mills and Perry Groves on Talk Sport.
Tom Watt, are you with us?
I am, more or less.
Hello, Tom.
With you in body at least.
How are you, mate? All right?
Yeah, a little bit hoarse, mate, but I'm all right. I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm here with Perry Groves, who's getting stick on Twitter.
How could anybody give Lord Perrington stick?
Right, Tommaso Canoso, how are you?
Yeah, not bad good, at all, good. Mate. Very, very good afternoon of it in Block 104, pal.
No one expected it, Tom. Come on, be honest. No one expected that.
I'll tell you what, least of all me and me boy, to be fair. I did, you know, I didn't think we'd get Muller, but I did think, you know, Chelsea, they just find ways of winning games, don't they? But to be honest, from kind of the first minute of the game, you thought, oh, blimey, we're at it here. And there was a spell before Sanchez's goal where we must have passed the ball 40 times without a Chelsea player touching it. And you thought, you know, we might be onto something.
The only thing, Tom, as it the game transpired, and obviously we got in front, which is great. And then we missed a couple of chances. Ozil should have scored, shouldn't he? Then we hit the post. Anyway, in my head, I was thinking, we ain't been ruthless enough here. You know, yeah, Chelsea know. Can't be as bad in the second half.
I know, and guess what? Guess what?
They were.
Yeah, days.
Now then, Tom, I'll just read one of the tweets we've had. We had a guy from a Liverpool fan who was very, very complimentary, but he did make the point, and someone was tweeting and saying, the problem is, of course, is that there is a sense of entitlement amongst some fans.
Some, not all, some.
No, but certainly some of the... Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If you're 35 and you went to the football with your dad at Arsenal when you were 10 or even younger, you've never known that you could not be in Europe. You didn't even know that was an option. You presumed that you were in Europe every single year. Now then, what is the feeling amongst the bulk? Because I don't count.
Are you asking me politely here, Bob? What is the feeling amongst older supporters?
Yes, that's what I was going to say. I was so coming at that, so round the houses. And I should have just said it. What are the old guys thinking?
Supporters who were at Wembley in 1971 to watch us beat Liverpool to do the double.
They're the type, yeah.
You mean that? I'll be perfectly honest with you, you know, Bob. I grew up round the corner from Arsenal. And I sort of, you know, you think, blimey, could have grown up round the corner from an awful lot of football grounds. And I'm happy it was that one, really. To be honest, although you're absolutely right that, you know, supporters of a certain age will have known nothing but Arsenal under Arsene Wenger. To be perfectly honest, you kind of look back all the time I've been supporting them. And you'd go, well, we ought to feel entitled. Do you know what I mean? If there is going to be a sense of entitlement, because we've not had a bad throw of it even before Arsene got there. Do you know, you think about the Arsenal teams under George that Perry played in. You know, you think about those Arsenal teams under Bertie Mee, Terry Neal, who got us to 3 cup finals in a row. Do you know what I mean? It's not been bad all along. I think that it's just... It's kind of changed, mate. It's not so much the age of supporters, it's the way that football's consumed. And I just think it's become a game for kind of people who watch on telly and people who tweet about it and people who go on social media about it, rather than the people, you know, you think back to before the Arsene Wenger era. And to be honest, I mean, this might sound like bizarre, but football weren't all that popular. A lot of people didn't like football. Mm. A lot of people didn't talk about football. Now, it's the national conversation. Everybody thinks they've got to have an opinion, and they pick their opinions up almost any way but actually going and watching games.
Tom, you know what you said there? Football was popular amongst football fans.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's now like it's become a bit trendy, isn't it?
Now it's a bit trendy, mate. It's the national conversation.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is people... Who talked about football 20 or 30 years ago were people who really, really loved football. You know, I think now a lot of the conversation about football goes on between people who just like to have what they love is something to talk about.
Yeah, and have an opinion on something. Yeah,
exactly,
you're right.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of, it's Piers Morgan down sort of thing. And you just go, but fair enough, everybody's welcome to an opinion. And you just kind of... you know, I'm there with my boy who's, 18. Of course, he's never known anything but Arsenal under Arsene Wenger. And to be fair to him, he's been at 3 cup finals and watched us win 3 already.
Tom, in his
short life.
It's amazing. My two boys, Lewis is 27, Drew's 25. Under Arsene Wenger, they've had 8 FA Cup finals.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? 8. And when people look back, which obviously happens in, you know, 15 years' time, that little period of time, think, oh my God, you see Arsenal there, they was in 8 and they won 7 of them.
All right, Tommy, lovely to talk to you, mate. Look after yourself.
Happy Arsenal.
Cheers, Tommaso.
There you go. Yeah, see, he's very happy. You've won the FA Cup.
Talk Sport.
He finds the corner of the net.
Extraordinary stamina, energy, and skill. Get your tickets now. Talk Sport.
Exeter are in their own 22. They have the ball. 2-1. The clock goes red. And now it's just a case of somebody taking the ball and putting it into the stand. Campignaro will do just that. He clears the Wasp players. It goes into the stands. The whistle goes and players just fall to the ground in agony, ecstasy, or just flat-out exhaustion. Exeter, congratulations. You are Aviva Premiership champions for 2017, the first in the club's history.
There you go, that was Andrew McKenna on TalkSport 2 yesterday, talking us through the final moments of a momentous Premiership. That's why you have to be careful in rugby.
It's well done, you.
They're very much. And Nick Heath's joining us to talk about that. I don't know a great deal about rugby, but I know that Wasps were going to beat Exeter. I was pretty sure of that.
They were favourite because of their
and they're a team that
financial clout.
I've
as
heard
well.
Of Wasps. You know Wasps and Bath and all these sort of teams. But Exeter sound like, are they going to be playing Camborne in the local cup competitions?
Well, I certainly think that was the case for a lot of rugby fans throughout the land, certainly 7 years ago, which is when Exeter Chiefs made the leap up to the Premiership. And, well, the model they set themselves down in the southwest under Tony Rowe has quite clearly gone from strength to strength. They got up into the Premiership, started playing a very nice brand of rugby and held on to a lot of those championship players and the cohesion in that club. You know, you've seen it in football. Certainly the Leicester City season was where it seemed that all the players were pulling in the same direction. It was the sum of the parts, and certainly that's been the Exeter story. And they've stayed together under the coaching of Rob Baxter, who many, I think, are thinking is slowly but surely putting himself in the frame for a post-Eddie Jones era with England. And Exeter Chiefs were deserving of the victory yesterday. But my goodness, as you could hear from Andrew McKenna's commentary there, I mean, it was heroics from both sides by the end. Players absolutely exhausted after 100 minutes in close to 30-degree heat.
Nick, there was a lot of tension towards the end as well because they had a try disallowed, didn't they, Exeter?
Yeah, they got over and JP Doyle, the referee, went up to the TMO and crucially he asked the question, try, yes or no. There are a couple of questions a referee can ask the TMO, and if he'd have said any reason I can't award the try, then that would have basically meant that he believes it's fairly conclusive it went down, even if he can't necessarily see the ground. But it was try, yes or no, because he wasn't sure if the ball was actually over the line. A few of the Chiefs were celebrating, sort of selling it to the referee, as you would expect them to at that moment in a final. But it wasn't totally clear. And I think the fact that, you know, there weren't too many protestations when the referee said, look, there's nothing conclusive about it being scored, so we're going to have to go back for this. And I think said, you know, it wasn't a decision that he could give or the TMO could give. It was all the pressure on Rowan Kitt in the truck at that point. But we then had more agonising minutes with them tied at 20 points apiece as they continued to find a way of separating the two teams.
And what about Gareth Stenson? The bottle, I think it's known as, isn't it?
Yeah, Spino he's been there since they came up from the Championship. He's an Ulster man. He lost his father in recent years, and he said in the post-match press conference that he said a little prayer to the man upstairs to help him with the last one. It was a meat and drink kicker, really, for someone of his standard. Out on the left, right-footed, curling it in right from right to left. So he would have got many of those in his sleep, but certainly with the amount of pressure to actually then clinch the title with such a move was an enormous amount of pressure for him to deal with. And he slotted it. Was a real hero last night. And judging by most of the pictures going around on social media and Instagram, the Chiefs started tucking in, as you would expect them to do, on the bus on the way back to the southwest. I think they probably got back to Devon, where there may not have been a drop of scrumpy left.
Explain this to me. Speaking, and I'm not going to pretend. Obviously, the temptation is they give you notes, so pretend that you know more than you do. But here's the Definitely. Thing: when Wasps play, what would their average gait be?
Well, they've been up at the Rico, and certainly towards the semi-finals, they were pushing 30,000. The average gait, not so sure. Probably looking this season, I would say around anything between sort of 13 and 15, I would imagine.
And Exeter about the same or
no.
less?
Exeter are a little less down right. in Sandy Park. They don't have the capacity because obviously the Rico can go up to 30. But it would be down less at Sandy Park. But, you know, that was all part of the development of the club. Tony Rowe putting money into the club to develop a world-class stadium, which, is not the biggest. And they've got plans to expand it as well. But certainly the conference facilities and everything it became a destination venue for so many people to use that financially it just became a more stable model for the club. And that's how they've been able to hold on to players, sign a few bigger names, the likes of Dean Mum, who've been down there, the Australian, and Jeff Parling, who made the big move from Leicester to go down there. And these sorts of players have been sort of great additions to the setup they already had coming up for the Championship to get them over the line.
So yesterday, give or take the odd, there's 80,000 people at Twickenham.
There certainly were.
So this is it's huge, isn't it? So they are. Is that a combination of the two supporters
and rugby fans in general?
Or they're just rugby fans in general? I mean, that's the
rugby
difference.
Rugby fans in general. I mean, you certainly, rugby can be tribal. It's not quite as tribal as football. And I think the fact is that a lot of neutrals love a big day out at the Premiership final. The sun was shining, so the walk-up was good as well. So they hit, just shy of 80,000. It was a lot of neutrals. There were fans decked out in Leicester Tigers colours. Because don't forget, the semi-finals were only a week before, involving four clubs. So everybody's buying a ticket for the big day out. And I think it's fair to say that most neutrals were wanting it to the Chiefs. I mean, both clubs had a fairly romantic story behind it. It was back from the brink of extinction, really, with all of their financial problems, and then that moved to Coventry. But that proved to be everything they needed to get them back on the straight and narrow, and then looking like potential champions. They were, of course, top of the Aviva Premiership table outright. But we all know that it comes down to the semis and the final. There were a lot of fans there from the neutral point of view, and I think they were delighted for Exeter. Even my old man, I grew up watching Wasps and London Irish and Harlequins and any clubs in sort of West London, and I got a text from my dad yesterday morning that said I might go up and watch the game because I want to see Exeter win it. And that's just rugby fans through and through, really. I think the romance of their growth and what they've done in the 7 years since they've come up has impressed a lot of people, and they're deserving winners.
Nick, you mentioned obviously the growth from 7 years ago and Sandy Park. My lad Drew was in university in Exeter and used to go and work at Sandy Park to earn a few quid. He was a waiter there, in the home game for a corporate company, and he said. It's that they were obviously growing slowly, but it was very much like a family-run club, very much community-orientated. They have to send their coaches into Exeter Uni, to help the university rugby team out. So it's an ethos that they've created.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And that seems to be the theme that's running through the clubs that are the most successful. You know, Saracens see themselves very much as a family club. The players are encouraged to bring in their wives and their children at any opportunity to, they have a creche during training or at the home games. And they want to know, what you're doing outside of rugby and what holidays you're going on and all these sorts of things. And Exeter are very similar. It's a niche little oasis down there in the southwest. There aren't other clubs particularly near them. So they occupy that. I mean, it's similar in the sort of southwest of France. That's where rugby is a real heartland. And local rugby clubs have a big part to play in that area of the country, perhaps more so than certain other parts. So Exeter became a real hub, getting into the Premiership and bringing other Premiership clubs to come down and play at Sandy Park. Brought people out of the woodwork to support the Chiefs. The Tomahawk Chop is clearly the greatest chant there is in the Premiership. It creates a great atmosphere down there. But certainly that family atmosphere is a big key to what's gone on there. And it comes right from the top. It comes from Tony Rowe. It comes from Rob Baxter. They didn't turn around as the success was happening and decide to go for, another big DOR from somewhere or an international coach to come in and try and move them up or a head of rugby or some other role. They've stuck with what they know. They've allowed Rob Baxter to build that team, and under his ethos, they've risen to the top. And, I feel desperately sorry for Wasps, I have to say, because, they were absolutely in that final. They got to the point of getting themselves back in front in that second half. It really reminded me, if you'll forgive me, of Joshua Klitschko. It was two prize heavyweights going at it. There was a moment around 70 minutes where they looked absolutely out on their feet and were just sort of trying to trade blows with each other, and not too many were connecting, as you might say. But then they had to try and find that killer blow in extra time, which eventually, as we said, came from the boot of Gareth Steenson. But, James Haskell was one of those players on the sideline who was hurling his scrum cap to the floor and effing and jeffing to the sky, because you could see how much it meant to him and every sympathy was
delivered. It certainly did. Nick, you don't leave a gap, do you?
He didn't
You're
take
fantastic.
A breath.
Fantastic. You didn't take a breath then. You could have been drinking a glass of water doing that. You're a genius. That was fantastic. I kept waiting. I think in a minute there'll be a little gap and I'll thank him and wind up. But when you see, that's what I love.
Nice, a passion.
I don't understand rugby. I'm not a big fan of rugby. But
the passion.
So when you listen to someone who cares that much about something.
Absolutely.
But well done me for knowing Camborne and we're a rugby club.
And well done us for knowing DOR.
Oh, DOR, Director of Well, we're guessing it's director of rugby. Thank you so much for Nick Heath.
On digital radio and 1089 and 1053 AM. Talk Sport.
Once in your life, that's better.
Beautiful. You've been making merry with Mills and Perry. That kind of music.
No, whoa. I didn't talk over your prog rock rubbish.
On the sherry with Mills and Perry.
Let him go. That was the warm-up podcast. Hope you enjoyed it.